Hey, my name's Sean Chaler. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. Welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters. It's the first time we have talked since we went to Con and since we drove home and had our annual tradition of... Chris, I thought about this, not only our annual tradition of getting Taco Bell, but our annual tradition of you wanting something that they did not have. That happens every year. I don't necessarily know what it is every year, but... every year, and it's usually dessert, that it's a dessert, but anyway.
Oh, and Taco Bell specifically.
Well, I suppose whatever you want to get out of Con, I'm sure we could dig up something. No, specifically at Taco Bell, you know, if it was like 1 year that they were out of the Cinnabon dippers, like they were just out at that moment, and then this year they didn't have the caramel apple empanadas. And I feel like that's part of the tradition is you being disappointed. But it's still Taco Bell, so you're not really disappointed because it is what it is. And that's the last time we talked, and you got home, I'm sure, at like 2 or something outrageous. Not 2, that's crazy.
It was like 11:30.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. And now we're here again. Chris, how you been since then? What have you been up to?
Well, something I was looking for at the con that I did not find. After con, I was like, you know what? The day after, I was like, I'm going to buy it. And I was on a quest. I have been on this quest for some time now.
Everything sounds so much better when you call it a quest.
I've been on this quest now for some time now for the search for the Master Sword. And I finally found one, and I love this Master Sword here. It is, can't even really fully...
No, that looks amazing. That looks fantastic.
Has a great, I feel like I'm going to hit something.
What are we made out of here? What's our composition?
It's like 195% metal, except for this, you know, the leather thread. There.
So is it heavy?
It's freaking heavy, Sean.
Like 10 pounds heavy?
I think it's 7 pounds. I think it's like, I haven't weighed it, but I think it's about 7 pounds.
Dang.
Because I put it up against a 10-pound thing and a 5-pound. It felt like somewhere in the middle. But this would not... I would rather fight someone with the butcher knife than with this. It's just that heavy.
Well, Chris, that's because you ordered the Final Fantasy crossover Master Sword. That's what happened.
But apparently, this is a two-side, like, one-to-one ratio of how the Master Sword canonically is. And I just realized also that Master Sword is a weird length for a one-handed sword. It is 42 inches long. Most one-handed swords are not that long. And technically it's a 1.5 palm. You see how much space there is?
Yeah.
Like that's a lot of space for a one-handed sword. So really it's a 1.5, but you can't really hold it 1.5. You don't really have a grip. I have a little bit of a grip. Well, maybe I could hurt. Maybe I would rather fight with someone with maybe I would rather fight with this. But
canonically the Master Sword has always been, well, let me rephrase that. Canonically, Link has always had the ability to have a shield while wielding the Master Sword.
Which gives me even more credit to Link and how strong he is.
I mean, he's left-handed, which I think to this day is an accident. It was supposed to be right-handed. Left-handed hero, really? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, left-handed people. But isn't Link... in certain games, he's like a teenager. Like, we're talking about like a 17-year-old left-handed swinging a 7-pound Master Sword. That's wild.
Yeah. And maybe this would be... also the Master Sword has a weird... like, this thing is it's a really thick sword. Most swords aren't this thick to be like actual one-handed swords. But it's...
That's for the gravitas more than the function.
Honestly, and a lot of it is probably just that they made it to where it shows up easily on screen, which is why it's so
easy. Yeah. Which is fine. But I'm not one to pick nits with physics when it comes to my Zelda games. That's not my not the time and place. It's but funny to think of you getting the sword as being the quest, like you're on a Master Sword quest. Because you think about it over the years, like in the first game, the sword, the master, let me think. In the first game, there's three swords. You know what, Chris? I'd say
I've only played the 3D ones.
I would say if you had any NES nostalgia whatsoever, the first one is worth playing. But if you don't, it's impressive for an NES game. But I was trying to think. I don't even know. I'm fumbling over my words. Are there any games where you have to have the Master Sword to beat the game, or is it always essentially an optional quest?
No, you have to have it in pretty much in every single 3D one. I'm sorry.
No, not in the Switch ones.
Not in Breath of the Wild, because those are weird.
Do you have to have it in Wind Waker?
Yeah. I'm confident. Although I've only beaten Wind Waker like once, twice.
I mean, Wind Waker is one of my favorites, but now that I say that and then I feel stupid, it's like, do you have to have the Master Sword?
I'm pretty sure you do.
Yes, part of it is restoring it to its true power, and that's part of the quest. Okay, yep. Okay. Well, right. No, Chris, that looks great.
Yeah. No, I freaking love this thing. Like I said, I've been looking for one, but like, there's always been like random things wrong with them. Like, and I wanted this thing is the Master Swords have changed over time, canonically. But I wanted the one more so tied to Skyward Sword and all the way up to... They haven't changed since Skyward Sword. Twilight Princess is like slightly different.
It's like different, but it's the same. Like in my mind, that is the same iteration. If you were to break the Master Sword up into, you know, Master Sword over the ages, Twilight Princess is the same. Ish.
Yeah. Twilight Princess even has the green leather strap there. Only difference is it has like a golden trim and stuff around here. That's really the only difference.
Yeah.
But like Ocarina of Time's. No, you're fine. Sorry. What are you going to say?
No, it's the same.
Yeah. But Ocarina of Time's, though, is different. It's like this part here is like flatter. It doesn't flare up like that. So there are some swords that are like flat right here. Like they end right here. They don't have this like little come up. Yeah. And then there's other swords that like this part here feels more like where the sword goes in and then out. Some parts of those aren't. Some swords I've seen, this part just looks off. And some of the swords are too thin. I'm like, that's not, like, I want it to look, you know, they still look good, and they probably will be easier to fight, but they look a little thin. But this one here is probably the most perfect one I could get. It was $160, maybe $80, but I did not spend money at Comic-Con, so that's why I felt good about this purchase.
I'll defend that. You were very well behaved at Comic-Con. See, even when I look at this, like Wind Waker's is a different form factor because of the art style. But if you can get over the fact that it looks shorter, it also looks like the same like iteration of the Master Sword. It's really not till Ocarina that we've got sort of a noticeably different Master Sword.
Yeah, I think so.
Spirit Tracks is different, and Phantom Hourglass is different. I guess timeline-wise. Anyway, Master Sword, it changes a lot. It changes a lot.
I don't think they'll ever change it again. But I've been in very much a Legends of the mood, because since I bought the Master Sword, I was like, oh, I should go back. I've been meaning to go back and play Skyward Sword anyway, the game where the Master Sword is created. And then there's been a lot of rumors about an Ocarina of Time remake, like a complete from the ground up remake. Uh-huh. And so I've just been thinking about lots of Zelda lately.
I am all here for Ocarina of Time remake. I know that some people get upset because it feels like all Nintendo does right now is remakes and stuff, but I'm old, and if what you're making is a game I really like on a console that I have currently, I'm completely fine with that. And also,
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if they made it just for the Switch, too.
Probably so. I think we're going to get to that area pretty quick, like Switch 2 changeover area pretty quick. And then I also heard rumors, there was a little stretch of time there where there was rumors of, like, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess just getting the Wii U ports brought to the Switch and Switch 2. And they port everything else from the Wii U because why wouldn't you? Like, come on, just put those. Like, I will pay. I think I'd pay $50, if not just a full $60 for just a port of those Wii. Because those are really good on the Wii U, except the fact they're on the Wii U. But those are great little HD remasters. Anyway, Chris, the sword looks great. Looks heavy. Looks great.
Yeah, now I just need to. I might make one myself. A stone. I might just make it out of wood and then, you know, paint it up and whatnot. Because I feel like it needs to be in a stone type of deal.
I'd love it. What I'm trying to think of. What about like a styrofoam or something like that painted gray, but then with like a weighted base so it didn't tip over and it could be.
Yeah, I'll be too afraid that it will cut through the styrofoam over time.
That's kind of awesome in terms of problems to have. That's a cool one. Anyway, that's awesome. Chris, I wasn't in a Legend of Zelda mood, but now you talking to you about Legend of Zelda made me want to be in a Legend of Zelda mood. And so
I know, and I've just been sending you random Zelda stuff. That's my Sean, this is a random Zelda theory that won't come true. But way, this is what's on my mind.
Way worse stuff to get random messages about. It makes me want to replay it, so I've been thinking, like, do I want to replay all the Zeldas? And immediately, like, no, I'm too old and too bad at video games. And I thought, do I want to replay them all with cheat codes and save states just to, like, go through them? And I thought, maybe. So I'm thinking about just like, starting at the beginning, chronological, just fly through each of them to kind of relive the narrative more so than replaying the games.
And or you should do it in a chronological order of the timeline.
Shut your mouth. No, it's there is no timeline. The timeline is garbage. Wait, why? Nintendo really went through a phase where, like, suddenly Zelda had a timeline and Dragon Quest had a timeline. And there was another big one that had a timeline. Chris, you know what it was? It was, I'm going to mess this up, but I hope that somebody out there that knows more than me can correct, like, polish what I'm saying. There's something weird with, like, Captain Toad Treasure Tracker being canonically linked when it was on the Wii U, when we're talking about the Wii U. It was, like, canonically linked to, like, Super Mario 3D Land. And then when they ported it to Switch, they changed it slightly so that it was connected to Odyssey instead. Like, it was a really menial, and it felt to me like at that time when that happened, all of a sudden we had people coming out with like timeline official Zelda and Dragon Quest timelines, and I hated all of it, and games can just exist in their own universe. They don't have to have all this Disney Marvel crossover crap, and it doesn't have to be that way. They can just be their own stories. And I would play through them in probably chronological as they came out order, but I don't know, maybe I'll shake it up. I said it won't be a playthrough so much as a cheat through, but just for the narrative part.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you try to play by timeline, you would have to like stop midway through Tears of the Kingdom. Tears of the Kingdom, well, technically you would play Tears of the Kingdom, well, I don't know. Tears of the Kingdom technically takes place before everything and also after everything.
Both, every, yeah, I'm not gonna
Technically, it takes place during all of it because Zelda's a dragon for 10,000 or something years.
Dragon Quest, I thought, one thing I like about it is that there's like smaller groups that are kind of intentionally trilogies, and then they ignore each other otherwise, even if they have overlapping theme. I liked that. Like, the first three Dragon Quest games are their own little trilogy, and then 4, 5, and 6 are their own little trilogy. But it's by design, and it's on purpose, not just an afterthought. But anyway, yeah, so you kind of got the itch, so I was going to maybe throw the old stuff on my Switch. And I think on the Switch, I think I can emulate or appropriately play very literally every Zelda game. And that could be fun. That could be fun. I got a car trip Saturday. Like, I got like six or 7 hours worth of car ride this weekend to get started. That's probably what I'll do. Chris, today for our topic, for our not actually Zelda. Oh, wait, one more point. In like 2 weeks, because Chris told me I could, and I've always wanted to do this. Told me I could, whatever. We're going to have an episode about the show Community. And he said it. He gave me permission. I'm going to keep reminding. And we're like, maybe two weeks out, we'll do Community episode. And if you don't like Community, we're going to convince you to like Community. Just like Chris did to me back in the day. But now
I don't think what. I don't even remember what. How did I even tell? It was just what I was gonna like, hey, you should watch Community. I don't even remember. I gave you a bunch of movies to watch all the time. It was like a weekly thing.
It was very casual. You're like, hey, are you familiar with Community? And I was like, yeah, I've seen a paintball episode that was kind of funny. And you're like, yeah, season one finale. And I was like, and I saw this other episode that's kind of funny. You're like, yeah, that's season two or three. And you're like, so you've seen it? And I said, bits and pieces, and I liked it. And you just like, you should watch it, like, on purpose. And then I did, and I loved it. Watch it, like, intentionally and not just passively.
This is some Sean Chris lore that I'm learning.
It's very, very uninteresting origins, but I was already pretty sold. It was just a matter of you being like, yeah, the whole thing's pretty funny, and I went and watched it. Because it was on NBC, which, like, where I lived, you know, on a clear, cold night in December, you could pick up some NBC on the antenna. And then if there was the slightest bit of weather, you couldn't. And that always cracked. I think we were probably 50-plus miles from the nearest any, like, broadcasting stations whatsoever. So, like, cake, like ABC and CBS were always the strongest. But anyway, Chris, today's topic, we're going to watch. We already did watch. We are revisiting Avatar The Last Airbender, book one, chapter one. And we're going to tell you why it's the perfect pilot. And it's going to be great. We've done a couple of revisit episodes where we revisited episodes that we didn't like and tried really hard to find reasons like them. This is the opposite. We're revisiting it just to shove it in your faces over again. Also, I just kind of wanted an excuse to rewatch the first episode with kind of I tried a fresh perspective. I tried to blink it out.
That's hard for me to do when you're like, hey, think about it as, you know, watch it for the first time in 2026. And for some reason, my imagination just can't. I have a good imagination. I just can't get to, like, I have never watched Avatar. I'm watching Avatar for the
but I loved approaching it. That's funny. That's a big difference. I loved approaching it that way. Yeah, Chris, if you don't mind, I'm gonna kick us off and get us started.
Yeah.
Right. So, I've very intentionally like sit down, like, all right, it's 2020. Well, in my head, I was actually like, it's like 2022, and somebody tells me about this old show that they just put on Netflix that the viewership numbers are going nuts. I don't even remember if it was 2022. That was just inner Sean guessing when it came to Netflix. It's like everybody's watching this old show and just pretend you haven't seen it before and pretend you do have Netflix and you turn on, sit down and turn it on and this is what you see. And Chris, it just was, I was just like, it's just instantly engaging. It's instantly unique. It feels different than any other, at least cartoons that I'm familiar with. Not that I watch a ton of modern cartoons, but it's just instantly unique and engaging. It feels familiar, and yet there's enough just immediately out of the gate unknown to draw you in and be like, what's that? What's going on there? And just, I don't know, it was just instantly charming. Like, if I had not seen it until 2022 and I turned on Netflix and watched it, I know for certain I would have just immediately been like, yeah, I gotta see where they go with this. I gotta see what the magic water, what that turns into. I gotta learn more about Appa. Appa's instantly the most unique part of the first episode in his own way. I don't know. It was fun to like try to put those shoes on, and I was sold. Obviously, being of the right target audience, but I was sold instantly, resold instantly.
Yeah. So, for me revisiting, everything. No, I agree with everything you said. It is. For me, one of the things that stand out, so I'll go with the number one thing that stands out for me in terms of it being a pilot episode, is that I don't think I've ever seen a few pilot episodes. It hit the ground running in a way that I'm immediately in the universe and know what's going on. And a lot of that is first the intro, especially Katara's episode one intro, because it's different than the they change it for every episode after that, and like just the despair you see on her and Sokka's face. It's like, we're under attack, our father went to war, we're left here alone. Like, it's so desolate and hopeless. And then you get into them on the boat, exposition. Episode one is a masterclass in exposition, like to where it is seamless and you learn so much about the characters, but it doesn't feel like you're reading a Wikipedia page. They are just talking and you're learning from them. Just the Sokka being mad at magic water, Tar being like, it's not magic water, like it's a part of our culture. Her being like, ever since mom died, so-and-so, like, It's how to do exposition.
I should also, I can't believe that I skipped over this part. I'm not trying to circumvent, but just the opening, the intro is immediately engaging. Yeah. And you just like the way that it sets up the lore in less than 2 minutes is an instant hook. And then, yeah, exposition is always going to be like a little heavy-handed. It just is. This is as good as it can be done in this type of show without... I'm trying to... Just because we're talking about Zelda, Chris, and I'm thinking about like the very first Legend of Zelda game. And that's like the first time in video game history that there was actually lore that you had to care about. That's not true, but somewhere... But you had to read the book... Before well, you played you the game, if you cared. Probably,
what, Castlevania? Maybe? I don't know.
Let me think. No, Legend of Zelda could have been there. Let me think. You know, maybe like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons in television games may have had a hair of story if you had a manual with those. Those are kind of thought of as like proto Zeldas in their own weird way. But nah, but you would have had to pick up the manual and read the manual before you started the game. It's like, no, this, you get thrown in with a great intro, and 3 minutes into the episode, you're already feeling the world out pretty smoothly with, again, all heavy-handed a bit, but Not really here. It's pretty smooth.
Sorry, I have it all in the background.
I thought you were going to be like laughing at a Lakers score or something over there. I haven't looked at it yet.
No, our seasonals. Maybe Miracle Luka. Maybe he'll come back, get some type of...
With European witchcraft cures.
Yeah, they got better healthcare over there. You know?
For sure.
Maybe our doctors are...
For sure, yeah.
I think, on a median sense, they have better healthcare. But I'm sure we still have the best in the world. But he's still going to Europe. Maybe they know something doctors don't.
I would assume that we have like the top notch possible treatment.
We have the best money can buy.
Yeah, if you have said money, which Luca does, but.
Yes.
Who knows what he's got going on over there in Europe. I have literally no idea. Anyway, get better, Luca. Thinking of you. But exposition masterclass. And then what?
Yeah. One thing I wanted to bring up, the title of the episode, which goes into is an SP. So, we talked about just how the intro, things are desolate. Hope is all gone. It's funny. I feel like stories don't often start with all hope is lost, but that's where Avatar starts off at, is all hope is lost.
Record scratch, usually free frame, freeze frame. You're probably wondering how we wound up here without any hope whatsoever.
And then we get into the title of the episode and our titular character, depending on where you're from, the boy in the iceberg. And Aang is just like, not that. Mm-hmm. He is so far removed from that he brings so much joy. And this past couple of days, I don't know what it is, but I've been gaining a new appreciation, even further appreciation for Aang. And I still love Korra. But like the appreciation for Aang.
You justify that really quickly as if you can't do both things.
The thing is, I'm an Avatar fan. I love Avatar. There's only one Avatar I don't like, and that's Roku.
Books suck.
I wouldn't say suck, but
just kidding.
But the thing I love about Aang is that he remains constant in this world where it's like where war and violence is the answer. From episode one, he's like, I want to go penguin sledding. and even after he learns about the war, he's like, I want to go visit all these places. And some people might be like, man, Aang is childish and stuff, but it's like that joy for life and things like that is crucial, not only to his character, but to what the world needs in that universe.
He not only is he consistent, well, I guess, from the first episode, you can't tell that, but you do appreciate it later. It's like, even through all that he's been through, and even through, we've established he doesn't have a tremendous arc, but there's a little character arc in there. But even after all he goes through, he still feels a lot like the Aang that you're seeing right now, that you're introduced to. There's no, like, pulling the rug out from under your feet, and, first you've got this character who all of a sudden he's traumatized, and now he's a different character. It's like, nope, that's the same Aang. If you like Aang now, you're going to like Aang at the end of the series, most likely. And not that you would know that for the pilot, but I would say that's a good thing. Chris, what else? What else spoke to you? I've got maybe one more element that spoke to me. That I think you agree with.
I think every good pilot makes you ask questions, and it doesn't give you much answers. Like, it doesn't give us answers to you know, we're introduced to Zuko. It does give us answers to why is Zuko looking for the Avatar? Like, we get that he's part of the Fire Nation, but it, like, also you ask yourself, what's up with his scar? You don't ask much questions about Iroh, honestly. He just is like a side fuddy-duddy character. But that's good. You don't, you know, I don't have to question everything on the first view. You just let some stuff grow. But again, I think it makes the audience ask a lot of questions that aren't answered until later in the series.
I think Iroh is pretty interesting. I didn't think about this part at all. Iroh is interesting in the sense that you immediately know that's not a bad guy. And you can put bad guy in quotes or whatever you want. You immediately know that's not a bad guy. That's a person that you're going to enjoy. And, you know, Zuko's the current bad guy, and maybe he's raising more questions. But that
you know what's funny about... Go ahead.
No, that actually might be the most fun part of the dynamic. It's like, I can see Uncle is... you know, good, and nephew is annoying, but uncle cares about nephew. And it just maybe already plants these little seeds of hope. And that's cool. I'm not saying you know what's going to happen. I just, that it plants these little seeds of a unique and powerful relationship. I probably wouldn't have given it that much thought. Just, that's not something I cue in on very good. But
yeah. What's funny is that in the credits, it doesn't say Uncle Iroh, it just says Uncle. Because I don't think the word Iroh is used in the first episode. Kidding. That's still weird to me. Yeah, it just says Uncle, and it says voiced by Mako. Well, it doesn't say voice, but it just says Uncle, Mako.
I did not know that. That's surprising.
Trivia for ya!
Let's hang on to that. That's good.
No, that's, no one's getting that one right.
The
what's
Chris, the other thing that maybe spoke to me more than I thought it would, or at least, you know, I tried to go in without thinking about it too much. I tried my best to have a fresh experience. Is the thought, man, this animation and voice acting is timeless. So, you know, like when I complain about Bob's Burgers animation just being garbage, even though I do enjoy the show, and it's just a product of that time that the show was started where animation was, I don't know, getting lazy and they're trying to get by. And this is not good analysis for me. Feels like shows had lazy animation. They're trying to get by on like uniqueness more than quality, yeah. I guess. It was nice to instantly just like, you know what? No, this animation that I'm watching right here and the quality of the voice acting is timeless. This is going to look good in 10 years. It looks good now. It'll probably look good beyond 10 years.
It's interesting. It's very
comfortable to see.
I think for an American audience, this is probably the... It's hard to say because, like... This came out when I was in like 10th grade, and the animation at the time, I wasn't thinking about really good looking animation and how good animation looks compared to other animation. It was just all kind of animation. Now there were like action scenes where I was like, oh, this action scene is cool. Like Dragon Ball Z might have a really cool action scene. But even then, like when I was watching Yu Yu Hakusho, like there's certain scenes where I'm like, oh, I appreciate, like, they might change a scene up animation style for a certain fight scene because they just wanted to put their own twist on it or something. Or just to build the scene bigger. At that point in time, I wasn't thinking to myself, oh, this animation is so cool. And so, yeah, 10th grade, me was just like, this looks good. Looks different than other stuff on Nickelodeon. But other stuff on Nickelodeon also looks, well, not like Doug, not Rugrats. But like, Hey Arnold looked good animation. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Rugrats, but that is an animation style I do not miss. Yeah. Hey Arnold and Doug. Doug, nah. Well, I don't know, 50-50 on Doug. Hey Arnold, I love. It's beautifully animated. But I would say they all, not all, there's a lot of shows at that time that just had a similarly high quality of animation if you turned on Disney or ABC or Nickelodeon, and it was still mostly hand-drawn, I imagine. I don't know that to be true.
Man, I miss hand-drawn animation so much. I know it'll probably never come back to the peak it was at. Like, watch the Mario movie, and the animation is fine, whatever. It's 3D. I mean, it's good animation. It's good 3D animation. But at one point, Foss McCloud shows up. it's like, I mean, I don't think those spoilers. I knew he was already announced.
Yeah.
And, like, he talks about his backstory, and it cuts to 2D animation. And I was locked in. When it turned to 2D animation, I was like, this looks great. Why can't we go back to... I know we'll never go back to 2D animation because it's hard. I'm sure it's way harder than 3D animation. But man, I'm still so mad the Avatar movie's not going to be in theaters. Like,
I think like, also, one of my biggest concerns with AI... AI art, let's say AI art. There's a ton of implications with AI art with which I'm not comfortable, and you know, taking money away from artists and opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. And then also just that everything's gonna look the same, and not necessarily stylistically the same. It's just all gonna look AI generated, kind of like how every Pixar movie looks the same. You know, it's I'm tired of it.
I do think this may be just the optimist in me, is that the more AI becomes easy for people, because I feel like, oh, my battery's about to die. I thought this phone was charged. That's weird. No, don't die on me.
Don't you dare die on me. You're gonna live, you son of a bitch. I just got through the episode. Where Turk does the emergency tracheotomy on the guy by the hospital stand, and then Perry's trying to get him to like be pompous because that's part of being a surgeon. and Perry's like telling the story. It's like God looked me in the eye and God blinked.
That's so weird. I thought my phone was charged. Like anyway. Worst case scenario, I'll just pull up my tablet. But yeah, and 2D animation, man. And it looks so like the last great. Although Demon Slayer looked amazing on the big screen. Oh my gosh!
Okay.
Yeah.
That performed pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, it made like maybe like 400 million.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, 400, maybe. Yeah, I think it made, wait, million? Yeah, 400 million. Somewhere around there. Made a lot of money.
And is the next statement you're going to make in reference to Princess and the Frog, to that absolute...
Yes.
The absolute gem. Sometimes I hope that we're not overrating that movie for that reason. But then, like, I probably watched that movie once. That's a top five Disney movie for me. I think we both had it in our top five in our rankings episode way back when. That's a great movie. I love them. I love every aspect of that movie. I love what it turns on its head. I love the animation, the music, the narrative, all of it. Like it follows a script, but not like it, you know, like a normal kind of Disney script, but not quite, not exactly. It puts enough things on its head to be unique and interesting. And I don't know. I'm just kind of tired of 3D. Tired of 3D animation, 3D CGI type animation.
My bad. I misquoted. Demon Slayer made $737 million.
That's awesome.
Worldwide.
Can I sit down, Demon Slayer?
Avatar could have made half of that and would have been successful.
Yeah. Damn you, Paramount. I think I'm blaming Paramount, right? Damn you.
Yes. All blame goes to Paramount.
Okay. That's too bad. But anyway, Chris, what else? What else jumped out at you as to why you watch it and you're like, this is how pilots should be forever?
I mean, I think I hit on the big things. I mean, we do get a sense of Sokka, and how misogynistic he is. But there's tension there. Like the pilot, it builds tension. Has, you know, every good story has tension. That's why sometimes tension feels forced stories. So sometimes, like a writer, I'll be writing a story, and they're like, "Oh, there's not enough tension in here." And if there's not tension, then like, it's not interesting. Granted, you can, you know, create tension in better ways, but there's tension in this story. There's Katara wanting to learn more about her culture. She wants to, like, Katara is the Disney princess in this episode, right? So, like, every Disney princess has her song of, like, I hate it here. I want to move somewhere to people who love and understand me. Every Disney princess has that song. And Katara is the Disney princess here because she's like, I want to leave this place. I want to go and grow and learn and how to water bend. Like,
I will
and
not.
Aang is not the right.
I will not allow you to lump Hercules, beloved Disney classic, and Princess Meg, who's not really a princess, into that category.
Oh, yeah. Hercules is the biggest one. I will find my way. Well,
but that's a him thing, not a her thing.
True. Oh, my bad. Yes.
That's a hero
yes.
thing. I love Hercules. Yeah, that's also a top five. That was might have been my one. Anyway.
I don't watch Hercules that often. I think I watched it.
That was the first Disney movie I intentionally like watched with Cam. Like, I mean, he's asleep, he's a baby, but I like sat down with him in my arms like, this is gonna be his first Disney movie, and it's Hercules.
Oh, it was weird. It came out. I remember exactly when it came out. I was in fifth grade.
90.
I remember this girl.
Eight-ish.
This girl gave me this McDonald's, Happy Meal football that was Zeus for my birthday.
I can picture that football.
And I didn't like the movie. And I didn't like football, but I still accepted the gift and stuff.
I'll say, is that what you said to that person?
Well, her name was Shira.
I don't like football or Hercules, but thank you.
I never seen the movie at that point. It was just like not. I wondered if my mom not take us to see that movie because it had Greek gods in it, or she maybe just wasn't our radar.
I wouldn't be surprised. Disney's like biggest movie or anything was maybe not.
Yeah.
Great movie. I hope that Cam will remember if I ritualistically watch it with him like once a year. Eventually it'll become his favorite movie. It's touching. But I digress. Chris, I think that's probably enough of why it's a great pilot. We're obviously probably preaching to the choir here. If you're watching this episode, you're probably familiar. But I encourage you, you don't necessarily have to wipe your slate clean, but just watch through it and think to yourself, like, man, what does this do right that hooks the audience? What did this do so well that pulled in such a big, just vividly loyal fan base forever? And just try to watch it through that kind of scope. And appreciate what it was doing.
Because I'll probably ask this question in the next episode. Do you think it could have done anything better?
Oh, that is a good question. I always find exhibition dialogue. There's always little teeny tiny bits of it that I'm like, maybe that could have been punched up just a little bit. But also, it's usually in this case, it's coming from kids. And that's not that far off from how kids talk. So I'm talking myself in circles like I thought I was on to something I don't. What could have been done better? You know what? No. If I have to think this hard about it, Chris, no.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything I mean, sure, there are some shows that grab you quicker, but that, to me, that's not necessary for a... I don't know how this would... I wouldn't want this to grab you quicker. Like, it grabbed me at as much as it should have grabbed me.
It grabbed me at the amount I was willing to consent to be grabbed.
No.
Bye, phone. Chris, I'll play us off. You fix your phone. Anyway, yeah, thanks for watching Avatar, The Last Podcasters. That disappearing screen over there, that's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. And my name is Sean Taylor. Thanks for watching Avatar, The Last Podcasters. All the positive interactions you can have with us, those would be great and appreciated. I'll leave more details down in the description, and we'll see you next time.